Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Today, we continue with a series of programs on positive changes we can make in our lives as we spring into spring. But I'd like to begin by asking you a few rather negative questions. And don't worry, we have a very helpful guest here today, and I promise we'll end up on a positive note. But here's the first question for you. You can ask this to yourself. Do I consider myself an under-earner? In other words, I earn far less in my job or business than I once thought I'd be making at my present age. And am I far from satisfied with what I earn? Question number two, do I resent rich people, especially people my own age who earn a lot more or have more possessions than I do? Did they simply luck out and get all the breaks? They all went their way and none of them went my way. Question three, do I hate paying the bills? At the end of the month, do I fear running out of money before all the bills get paid? I know that's no fun. Question number four, no matter how much I make, why is there never enough left over for savings, say for retirement, for our kids' college, medical emergencies, whatever? And the final question, number five, do I often shop for things I don't really need and wind up feeling guilty, deep in debt, with a house full of stuff? I know there's a lot of stuff in my house that I don't really use very much that I'm in the process of clearing out. But like I did for years, do you sometimes wonder why you're struggling financially while others no smarter or more talented than you, perhaps with less education, are making big bucks and enjoying the good life? And if you answered yes, would you be surprised to learn that most money problems are the result of emotional blocks inside your own mind? Well, my guest, Joan Sotkin, contends that that is indeed the case. You may be suffering from what she labels negative money feelings, the emotions you are acting out through your money or lack thereof. And the good news is you can begin to heal those money feelings right away, get unstuck, develop healthy financial habits, and achieve prosperity along the way. And Joan is here to point out that way to go. And Joan Sotkin, for over 25 years, has been helping folks like you and me recognize, release, and replace negative emotions that interfere with prosperity. She's been there and done that. In her own words, Joan has had a wild and crazy ride with money. In the past, she's gone through bankruptcy, but she's also built successful businesses. And she's presently a successful author, prosperity coach, and counsels both individuals and businesses on holistic approach to financial success. She's a true internet pioneer. She started her highly acclaimed web site, Prosperity Place, way back in 1995, if you can believe that, because the internet wasn't very far advanced back then. And she's author of the book, Build Your Money Muscles, 9 Simple Exercises for Improving Your Relationship with Money, also author of several other books and audios. And hello, Joan, welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age. It's great to have you.
Hi, Roy. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, to get us started, tell us a little about your personal situation. Way back in the 80s, I knew you were deeply in debt and struggling financially, and that started you out on a personal journey of exploration. And what did you discover that was causing your financial problems back then?
Well, actually, it started probably in the 70s when I remember I was wandering around with everything I owned in a backpack, and I was looking for the truth with a capital T. I had given everything I owned away. Yeah. And one day I looked around, and there was my brother Mark riding around in a Ferrari. And I said to myself, what's wrong with this picture? why did he choose that pathway? And I chose to live this ascetic and very difficult life.
Yeah.
And I had been into metaphysics for a number of years, and Eastern philosophy, and so I was on a path of discovery. And what came to me along the way was that I do believe that we create our own life stories, that it doesn't happen to us, but through us. And so my question was, how do we do that? And what I came to believe was that we have these emotional habits that develop early in childhood, and they become part of who we are, and our emotions are what inform our behaviors, our decisions.
Yes, and so many times we don't even realize that what those emotions are that come from childhood. I know we've had several people talk about that on this program.
Right, and so it's actually the emotions that are the creative force behind your life stories. And if you can figure out, and it's not that difficult to do, what you're feeling, and you don't need a feeling vocabulary to do this, what you're feeling, and you can say, well, what am I feeling now as a result of the story I'm in? When did I feel this before? And what would I rather be feeling? And you can actually teach yourself, by you actually create new neural pathways in your brain so that you develop, over time, new responses to familiar stimuli.
Oh, that's fascinating. Yeah, well, what is the one factor that keeps so many of us stuck financially? And how can we overcome it so that we finally stop feeling trapped and frustrated? Is there one thing that...
I don't know that there's a magic bullet. And I think you have to look at two things. First of all, you have to look at the internal. What are your thoughts? What are your beliefs about wealth and money? And what are your beliefs about yourself? But also, a lot of people focus strictly on the mindset piece, but they never learn to manage money. And if you don't learn how to manage the money that you have, whatever the number is, then you're going to feel uncomfortable. You're going to suffer from what I call financial vagueness syndrome. And with financial vagueness syndrome often comes financial fear. And so a lot of coaches will look at, you know, the business skills and mindset, but they don't get into the hardcore financial skills. How are you keeping track of your money? How, when I say to people cash flow management, they just cringe. Well, I don't want to do that. Well, if you don't manage your cash, if you don't manage your cash flow, you're always going to be concerned about running out of money.
Yeah, I love the way that, you know, you. Obviously, you have to discover what those emotional roadblocks that are holding you back, and then suddenly you say, hey, I see why I've been struggling so long, but unless you go on to master those skills of management, it's not going to get you that far. Maybe you'll just enjoy being broke. I don't know.
Right. Well, it's like when I had, in the 1980s, I had a very successful business. It was I was the first one to market crystals and minerals for healing and meditation nationwide. I had a line of stones in 600 stores. I was grossing, in today's money, $50,000 a month. And went bankrupt because, and what I realized afterwards was I really had no idea how to manage that much money. I bought a lot of crystals. I had a great crystal collection, but if I had $10,000 in my bank account, I thought I had $10,000. I wasn't figuring on the next 30 days and what I needed. So I didn't, and I had a bookkeeper 3 days a week. I didn't know that I needed a controller. And one of the reasons I do the work I do today is because of that experience.
Yeah, that's such a classic example. There's so many entrepreneurs who have super bright ideas, and they launch, but they don't have the business management skills, and they aren't wise enough to hire the help they need if they lack them themselves, or to learn those skills. And their idea, like you say, go into bankruptcy because they can't manage the money and the funds flow, and they're geniuses in one way, but they don't know how to manage their business.
But one of the problems, like I have a client who makes a very good salary, and he has a hard time paying his bills, and he does all this, he acts out all this passive-aggressive behavior through his money. And I got an email from him today. It said, I finally get the cash flow piece, which is why I have such trouble paying my bills, because I'm so afraid when I pay the bills, I won't have enough left. Yeah. And it's that financial vagueness that keeps people in trouble. And the problem for entrepreneurs is that you don't know what your income is from month to month.
I've been there and done that. I used to, you know, I'd never know how many insurance policies I was going to sell the next month. And it's a scary existence unless you're attuned to it. You know, you have the cash flow plans and some backup plans in place so that you can weather the rough months.
Right, and so what I've done, I found it really difficult to use the cash flow projections in Quicken or QuickBooks because they assume you know what's coming in when you're doing the projections. So I created this spreadsheet so I could see everything in one screen that shows how much what my monthly expenses are, what days they're due, what other payments have to be made, how much money is coming in that I know is coming in, and how much so then there's a little box in the center of the spreadsheet that shows how much I need, how much I have on hand, how much is coming in, and then there's a bottom line number.
And I see
whether it's a plus or minus number.
Yeah.
And if it's a minus number, then I can adjust my spending.
Yeah.
You know, there's certain bills that don't have to be paid right away. You might have to pay a late fee, but if you're in a tight spot, you've got to know what to do.
Yeah, that makes so much sense to have that all right in front of you like that. That's great.
And if your listeners would like to have a copy of the spreadsheet, I made a video to go with it.
Oh.
It's called Joan's Ugly Cash Flow Spreadsheet and How to Use It. I showed it to one of my friends, and he said, boy, that's ugly, but it really works.
Yeah.
And so they just have to go to prosperityplace.com/spreadsheet, and they can watch the video and download the spreadsheet.
Well, what are some of the successful internal habits that are shared by people who always have, like you call it, more than enough money, and what do they do differently from those of us who suffer from a struggling less-than mentality? What are some of those internal habits?
Well, first of all, it's never about money.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever you're feeling about your money is really what you feel about yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Let's take a look at what money is. Money by itself has no value whatsoever. It's just pieces of paper and coins sitting there, or numbers in a book, or that's what money looks like.
That's exactly
right. And money gets its power when it passes between two people or entities.
Yeah, that's right.
In other words, there has to be a relationship in order for money to have power.
Yeah, that's right.
And the fact is, how you deal with money is how you deal with your relationship with yourself and others.
Yeah, that's such a good point that I noticed on your website that's such an important connection to make, that the money itself is not doing anything. It's the relationships, and like you say, both with yourself and with other people.
Right, and for example, when people look at their bank balance, they often contract. Oh, I should be making more. This is not enough.
How am I going to get through the next few days?
How am I going to retire
and all this kind of stuff?
It's rarely a neutral experience.
Yeah. But
the situation, it's just numbers you're looking at. The numbers are just telling you what's going on, and it's your feelings that you're bringing to the situation.
Yeah. Well, in your book, you talk about, and build your money muscles, you talk about creating your own financial identity, which is somewhat what you're talking about there, or similar to that. What is your financial identity, and why is a financial identity crucial to success with money?
Well, you have to perceive yourself as someone who earns X amount of money, or someone who perceives yourself as someone who can take care of money.
Yeah.
In other words, how you perceive, what your self-concept is, that's your identity vis-a-vis money. Well,
your financial identity also has to be in terms of what you want to accomplish in your life as well, I would think.
No, those are goals. Those are goals.
Okay.
In other words, your identity is where I am and how I am in the world of money.
Okay, that's
and if
your identity is what you are today or what you want to be, or should you
No, it's what you are today. That's your identity.
I see.
In other words, I feel, and it's, remember, it's never about the money. So if your financial identity is as an under-earner, or I always have less than, or other people make more than me, or those questions that you asked in the beginning. It's all about your relationship to yourself and how you perceive, that's the identity, how you perceive your position in life.
Yeah.
So, for example, I was brought up in a family where boys had more value than girls. Which is fairly common, particularly for people in the boomer range.
Yeah, it was even worse in prior years. Back in the Depression, my mother had to drop out of University of Rochester while her brother continued his education because women could always go to secretarial school.
Exactly. Incidentally, I spent my freshman year at the University of Rochester.
Oh, how about that? I think my mother made 2 years there before she had to drop out. Shame.
Okay,
so
when you have a sense, and my mother used to always say to me, never overshadow the men in your life. Okay, so
I like that, actually.
So I was programmed into this less than position. So I had two millionaire brothers, and I couldn't rub two pennies together, and that was part of it. I couldn't understand what my identity was in the commercial world.
Yeah.
My father always said, you better get your teaching degree so you always have something to fall back on if you get divorced.
My mother wanted my sister to go to Iowa State because she said there's a lot more men there than women, and you'll end up with a good marriage.
Right. So I got married twice, and I said, what they were telling me is not it. It was just too much laundry. I didn't like being the wife.
Yeah.
And so one of the hardest things for me to get over, and this happens to a number of my clients, is having a sense of intrinsic value.
Yes.
And that's what goes into the financial identity.
I see.
Do I have value just for being me, or does my value come from what I achieve and show you what I can do that fits into your concept of what I should be?
Yeah, that's such a good point, and it applies so much to somebody that loses a job or even retires from a job if they're whole identity is I am vice president of such and such, or you know, I am this and that, and then suddenly they lose that job or they retire from that job, and if they don't have that personal identity aside from their current position, then they feel kind of lost and worthless to some degree, and that's such a tragic situation.
Right. And so creating a new financial identity, which is what I help people do with my book, is it's developing the thoughts, beliefs, and emotional responses of the person you'd like to be vis-a-vis your finances. I am enough. I have enough. I trust myself with money. I know I don't overspend. In other words, that you have to create this through your actions as well as whatever techniques you want to use that are available for changing your mindset. But you have to take the action.
Yeah,
you have to start.
You can't sit around in your paralysis of analysis and I have a great mindset,
right,
but I don't do anything about it.
Exactly. You have to be willing to keep track of your money and to learn how, if you're in business, to learn what a profit and loss statement looks like and what a balance sheet is. And it's very dry. It's not exciting, but it's necessary. So many people go into business to do something that they love, but they don't realize they're in business.
No,
and they don't learn the skills that you need in order to make a business successful.
Yeah, and that's why it's sometimes so difficult to transition from the startup phase when you're doing what you love and into really managing, you know, where the business builds up and starts making a profit.
Right.
Because no one wants to let go of what they love, and they really should be letting go because they've got to have help to accomplish what they need to accomplish. But
right. So I think being in a business for yourself is not the easiest thing in the world, and people go into it with an unrealistic idea of what it means.
Yeah, and they just get rid of a boss, but they don't really know how to be their own boss and stuff.
Right.
Well, in your experience, what's the basic reason why so many of us overspend and end up so deeply in debt, and how can we reverse that pattern and manage our money in practical and healthy ways so that we consistently have more flowing in than going out? You mentioned, obviously, this cash flow statement, but why do so many of us get in debt? Is there emotional reason for that?
Yes. bottom line, yes. I was a compulsive debtor, so I really understand the whole debting thing. And one of the main emotions behind debting is feeling alone.
Oh, I see.
Because if I owe you money, you're not going to forget about me.
Huh. That's one way to put it. Unfortunately, sometimes the bill collectors, you wish they would forget about you, I guess, or maybe deep down you want that attention. I don't know.
Exactly. Absolutely. And I know I used to have a habit of, this is in the days when things weren't quite as computerized as they are now, and I'd call up the telephone company or the utilities every month and ask for an extension, and that was my way of feeling that someone cared about me.
Oh, wow. They cared about your check. That's about all.
Right, but it was making human contact. Same thing about spending, overspending, is needing that contact. Remember, when money passes between two people, it establishes a relationship.
And someone feels
really alone. They're, you know, and the saleswoman says, "Wow, you look great in that dress." Well, here's my money.
I knew a fellow one time that was deeply in debt, terrible with finances, but he was always bragging about his great friend, Friendly Bob, at the local furniture store who had sold him all his furniture.
Friendly Bob really liked that guy.
he cared about him as a person, I'm sure, and not just all the stuff he was buying and couldn't afford to buy. But,
right, and so to me, it's the emotions that inform our behaviors.
Yes. Well, have you observed two individuals of middle age of similar intelligence, talents, background, and education, and one was financially sound and the other struggling, what would you tell us was the probable difference between these two individuals' backgrounds? I guess it would probably go back to childhood, wouldn't it?
A lot of it does, but also you may be assuming that the person who is financially comfortable is also emotionally comfortable.
Oh, I see.
Because not everybody who has money is comfortable.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, someone who needs 10 Lamborghinis, to me, is not a comfortable person.
No, and there's a lot of people, unfortunately, out there that even if they are successful, they never have enough. And they always
exactly.
look at what their neighbor has or what they think they should have more than what they have. And that's no way to live life, that's for sure. But,
right. So part of the healing process is to learn, if you have a dissatisfaction habit or a longing habit,
yeah.
no matter what you have, you're going to long for more or be dissatisfied with what you have. So you actually have to teach yourself how to feel satisfied.
Yeah. Well, I know there's some good news in your website. No matter how old or how difficult your current finances, you indicate there is hope, and you can remove internal roadblocks to financial success. Can you describe real briefly your official Be Set Free FAST technique that you developed with Larry Nims, PhD? That fascinated me when I saw that.
Well, it's one of the energy psychology techniques that are becoming very popular. Another popular one is emotional freedom technique. And in my book, Build Your Money Muscles, I have a condensed version of Be Set Free Fast, which I call the power word technique. And on Prosperity Place, if you do a search for power word technique, you'll find the instructions. And what it is that your subconscious is a faithful servant. And we'll do whatever you tell it.
Yeah.
And so what you tell it is every time I use this word, you're going to either eliminate a belief or install a belief. In other words, there's a whole set of instructions that you give your subconscious.
Yeah.
And I love this technique. I worked with Larry for over 10 years developing the manual we put out about 10 years ago.
Nice.
And I use it all. I've used the technique a lot. I use it with my clients. It can be done by a person by themselves. And I do, of course, have the manual on my website. But it also helps to have someone else look at it who's willing to go deep into your emotional body, because when people try to fix themselves, they often miss the core of the problem, because to eliminate that problem is a threat to their identity.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That means they're not really getting to the core, I guess.
Right.
Not really determining what their identity is. And you know, we hear so much about the law of attraction and all that kind of stuff. It sounds a little like that. But as you point out, I think in your website, that just visualizing a positive outcome and favorable results doesn't always work. What do you need for actually to build your money muscles? I know you have to take action, but on the other hand, if you have too ambitious a plan, it's probably going to fail and leave you in a worse state. So how do you start building?
Right. Well, if you're programmed for failure, then you'll probably – but let's say you're making $50,000 a year.
Yeah.
And you say, okay, my goal is to make $200,000 a year.
Yeah.
You're probably going to be disappointed.
Yeah, you
but
write
if
down
you
that
say,
goal and –
if you say I'd
Lord
like to make –
to provide, I guess.
Yeah, but if you say I'd like to make 5% more, 10% more, the chances of you doing that are much greater, but then you have to adapt to doing something successfully.
Yeah, you have to picture yourself making that money, more money, but then you have to picture yourself of what you're going to do to accomplish that, I would think.
To accomplish it, to manage it, and how will you feel? And I have a client now who his business is booming.
Yeah.
And he knows the work that I do. And he said, I really need your help because I'm feeling totally overwhelmed by the amount of energy that's coming towards me.
Yeah.
And that's what happens when people win the lottery or suddenly make more money.
Exactly.
It's a threat to their self-concept, and it puts you into this very uncomfortable place of disorientation, because you don't know how to be that person or how to deal with that much energy.
That's so true. Why so many lottery winners have a disappointing ultimate outcome, because they're just not mentally ready. All their friends and their relationships and their thought processes are as a poor for, or a, you know, not wealthy, and suddenly they have all this money and they really aren't prepared for it. So it's and I also like the way you say to make small changes as you go along, and to prove your, that you can accomplish those changes, like even things like rearranging the furniture or something like that, as you say, can help you start establishing that new identity.
Yes, and getting used to what I call the moving stupids, which is what you get when you make changes. It's like when you move from one house to another, you really want to be in the new house.
Yeah.
But you get really stupid. You bump into things. You don't know where anything is. You lose your wallet. You lose your keys. It's that period of disorientation that comes with transition. So if you can do things like moving the furniture around, changing the way the toilet paper rolls off the thing, that little thing can make people so uncomfortable. It's amazing.
Well, I'm going to go into the bathroom and change my toilet from
top
unfolding to bottom unfolding, or I don't even know how I do it, actually.
But, right. And because changing your financial position is all about establishing new habits.
Amen. Yeah, that's just like losing weight, you know, on these crash diets when you don't really change your permanent eating habits are destined to fail. And the same thing with your financial habits. But
exactly.
Well, at middle age, many of us face a dilemma. We may have had modest success and have built up a small nest egg, although we don't think it's what we need or want to have, but we know it's not enough. But we're afraid to risk what we've saved on some kind of a risky career change or a new business venture or something that could have a big payoff. And what do you do? How do you? How much risk should we take? And how do you answer this dilemma when you're in that kind of a situation?
Well, I don't know that there's a one-size-fits-all for this.
No.
I'm a risk-taker.
Yeah.
I have the faith that whatever happens, I'm going to be able to handle it.
Yeah.
Not everybody has that faith in themselves.
No, that's
true. And you know, praying doesn't always work.
No.
You know, it's erratic in its results. And so I spoke to someone the other day who his mother always said, work for the state so you get a good pension. So he worked for the state for 30 years, and now he's got his own business and he doesn't have to worry because he's got this pension. Isn't that fabulous?
Yeah,
well,
that's great.
I never learned that. My parents never saved any money. For me, it was harder to learn how to save than to debt. It was easier for me to manage debt than surplus. And so, you know, if you're afraid to take a step, you need help.
Yeah.
You need to talk to someone who can help you assess the reality of your fear.
Yeah, and can help you assess how real your fears are or what your chances are of success rather than
getting
into something.
Exactly. It's like people say, well, I'm going to start an internet-based business and make a lot of money, which in today's world is a fantasy.
Yeah, especially if you don't have any idea of what that internet business is going to be.
But even if you have an idea, if you know you want to be a coach, the people who offer the courses tend to give pie-in-the-sky potential results.
Yeah. That's
you could be earning $100,000 a year in 90 days.
Yeah.
Well, that's very difficult.
Yeah.
And I've been doing business online for 20 years. And it used to be easy in the beginning when there were only 500,000 websites. It was easy.
Yeah.
Now, I talk to my friends who are doing business online, and it gets harder and harder every year because there's so much competition for the same dollars.
Yeah, that's very true. But, Well, in the brief time remaining, tell us a little about your acclaimed book, Build Your Money Muscles, 9 Simple Exercises for Improving Your Relationship to Money. Can you give us a sample of one or two of those exercises that you cover in the book? Because it really sounds
well,
the book is
divided into every other chapter is about the internal stuff, every other chapter is about the external stuff.
Oh, that's a good way to
So it's mindset and practicality. Mindset and practicality. The first half of the book is here's how to recognize the problem, and the second half is solutions. But what I've done, and this is very recent, is I've put together a program called Freedom from Financial Struggle, which satisfies a number of needs. One is people need to feel more connected.
Yeah.
That one of the main feelings that people act out through their money is aloneness. When people say, I need more money, what they really need is more people, because money always comes from people.
Yeah.
So it's a program that is built around Build Your Money Muscles. And it takes them for over 6 months through the steps with exercises and audios and transcripts and a monthly teleclass so that they connect to other people.
Oh, that sounds great.
And there's a Facebook group, and there's emails every 2 days with a suggestion of something to do. And that people can learn about at freedomfromstruggle.com.
Oh, I see. So that's a different website.
Well, it's brand new. I finally got it all together so it works right. And it's just for that program. It's for the Freedom from Financial Struggle program.
So, but the website is Freedom from Struggle?
Yeah, freedomfromstruggle.com.
I see. Yeah, that sounds like a fascinating website to go to. But you also have your primary website, prosperityplace.com. I know I went to, and there's a whole lot of different products there, as well as your book.
And a lot of free material.
Yeah, it's I noticed there's loads of free resources on there, and that's a great place to go. And you also have your weekly podcast on there, and the Prosperity Show, is that what you call it?
Yeah, the Prosperity Show, and it's now twice a week. One, I interview a guest, and one, I just express myself.
Yeah, that's great. Well, that site has been around since the Internet was in diapers, and thousands
Absolutely.
Of each month, so I think you should, too. And in conclusion, our guest, Joan Sotkin, emphasizes in her book and on her website that money is not an end in itself, and we all know that. But you know, you can't really accomplish a joyful, stress-free second half of life without successful money management. And to create your own financial identity, what you want to accomplish in life, how to define success, and how much money you will need for a joyful, stress-free, yet accomplishment-filled lifestyle on your own terms, and how you're going to handle the financial end of that in your financial identity. And Joan, your personal example and your message is an inspiration to all of us. And I know for years I went about it all wrong, looking outside for answers to stressful finances, when all along I should have been looking inside and discovering what emotional roadblocks were holding me back. And I finally have discovered that, and I'm living a great time at it now. And I suggest you do the same. And once you determine and then accomplish your financial identity, you help others along the way to conquer their financial demons, because all of us deserve to have enough money to live comfortably and enjoy life and accomplish those things that we were created to accomplish. And thanks a million, Joan Sotkin, and best of success in spreading your message.
Well, thank you, Roy. It's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure for us as well. We began today's program by asking ourselves 5 tough questions, and our guest, Joan Sotkin, has an inspirational message on your very own positive financial identity and how to attain that. But I promised at the beginning of the program that I would end on a positive note. So let's close the program today with 6 positive questions to ask yourself, either now or in the days to come. Positive questions which will let you gauge whether you're making progress toward midlife renewal. In effect, you'll be taking your emotional temperature. In the end, you and only you will be the judge of whether or not you've accomplished true and lasting renewal. It's up to you and no one else. You alone will know for certain whether you are at peace within, with your significant others and relationships all around you, and with the world around you, those you know closely and those you just meet on the street or those you work with. You alone will be able to gauge how much work you have left to do. As you reflect on progress, answer for yourself the following six questions. Question number one, do I feel good about who I am? When I'm around others, am I confident? When I am handling a financial transaction, am I confident that, I'm not spending too much or I'm making wise investments or wise use of my money? Can I hold my head up when I look at everyone I meet straight in the eyes? Question number two, am I certain that I know what I want or where I want to end up? You know, you don't start a trip without a clear goal in mind and a roadmap to get there. Am I on the right track? Do I have a realistic goals and an action plan to accomplish essential career, lifestyle, financial, and relationship objectives? Question number three, have I taken control of my life? You know, we talk about this all the time. I'm relying upon continued guidance from the supreme being, God or whatever you want to call that being, and my personal board of directors, and that's loved ones and trusted advisors. Have I appointed myself CEO of me? Who else are you going to appoint CEO of yourself than taking control of your own life? Question number four, is my life today in physical and emotional balance? And am I comfortable with the time and energy devoted to God, friends and family, community service, and my own physical and emotional well-being? You know, is my body in shape to accommodate a renewed mind and spirit? It's very tough to be really renewed in mind and spirit if your body is 40 pounds overweight or lacking in energy. So we all know we need to devote time to personal fitness and personal emotional relaxation. Question number five, have I learned to enjoy the simple pleasures of being alive? Probably the most important question there is. Is it fun for me to wake up each morning and look at the sunrise? Am I pursuing a daily agenda which I enjoy and admire? Am I contributing value to others? Do I cherish my hours away from work? Am I spending them wisely? That's certainly an important question. And six, the final question, without hesitation, do I anticipate a brighter tomorrow? Now, none of us obviously can control where the national economy is going or what crisis of nature or what else may strike, but we can always be confident that whatever issues or challenges we face, that we are capable of handling them and coming out the best. And am I uniformly optimistic about the future, whatever challenges I face? And am I confident in my ability to accomplish every lifelong objective that I consider truly important? That's a very crucial question. And if you can honestly answer yes to each of these six questions, congratulations. You have accomplished your initial mission. You definitely are on the road to a new life, not a foreign life, but a new, improved version of you. And should you conclude that you still have work to do, please do not despair. Continue to envision success. Live for the moment to the fullest and strive every single day to refine and solidify both your short and long-term objectives. Remember, it's baseball season, and in life renewal, just like in baseball, but unlike baseball, you don't have to face three strikes and you're out. Relax. You can remain up at the plate for as long as it takes to point your life in a positive direction, and each new day presents a unique opportunity for a fresh start. Above all else, you must always remember, if you truly believe that your life will improve over time, it undoubtedly will. And I invite you to preview my book that's all about midlife renewal. It's called A Midlife Challenge Wake Up by Roy C. Richards. You'll find it on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and on our website, MiddleAgeRenewal.com. Once again, that's A Midlife Challenge Wake Up by Roy C. Richards. And that's our program for today. Tune in next week when we'll talk about preparing emotionally. We've talked about preparing financially in the past, but next week we'll talk about preparing emotionally for a joyful, stress-free retirement. And never forget, middle age can be your best age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.